Let's talk about Petzl.
Let's talk about Petzl, Scott.
You know, I was surprised when we interviewed Jared Campbell recently that was his torch of choice when he ran Barkley marathons.
Why would you be surprised about that?
I'm not surprised at all.
Let's think of the attributes that that torch has over every other lighting.
Well, if you think about why that course is so much different, there's no trail marking. So you got to be looking up and memorizing the terrain, even at night, to know where you are, be able to look down at your compass and not be blinded by the reflection to read a compass and then look up and have complete visibility.
So you're talking 7 lumen, all of a sudden 350 plus lumen, and
without touching the torch itself.
Oh, that's good.
It has that reactive lighting that adjusts depending on where you're looking.
Well, you know, for me, and I'm not an orienteering guy, but when I look forward and I'm looking for a trail marking, perhaps a ribbon, maybe a reflective tape, you know, I would appreciate that kind of illumination. You know, give me 300 plus. So that reflective tape calls to me.
So Sally McRae has gone out and run with us a couple times, and we've let her use our Petzl torches. And she came back and said, "Guys, hook me up. I need a torch.
I am not running states without a Petzl."
And it was kind of comical because Don and I were arguing which one we would recommend for her, whether it's the Tika RXP or the Now. And
you went with the Now.
I went with the Now.
I went with the RXP.
I went with the Now because it's brighter and the battery lasts longer.
And I said, if we were as fast as she is,
she doesn't need the battery.
She needs to worry about that longer lasting battery.
But I think we've talked about that this is the new technology for trail running.
The rest
you shouldn't have to worry about batteries ever again.
Yeah. And I was running with a guy just an early morning before the sun came up, and I noticed that he was a little light on his, not his feet, but light on his illumination.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because he's, you know, halfway through a battery. And I said, you know, if you got to knock that off, Mitch, you have to have a fresh battery every time you come out. Get one of these torches now.
Top it off. Make sure you have fresh batteries. Make sure you have the right technology. Make sure you have a torch.
Hey, and yours the other day started to blink a little bit. I thought that was a cool feature.
It does. It blinks before all of a sudden it just doesn't die on you. It gives you a little bit of a warning.
Yeah, that's good. Stay strong until you see a warning light, and then you know it's time to do something different.
Yep. So go check out all the torches at Petzl.com and pick yours up. It's the best value on the market.
Absolutely.
Scott Ward, let's talk about audiblepodcast.com.
Yes. You know, there is a movie out right now that is all the rage, that everyone is lining up to go see, called Divergent. You've probably seen it a few times, haven't you, Don?
No, but I've paid for multiple showings. I have two daughters and a wife.
Anyway, it's supposed to be all the rage. Well, you know, it's a movie that interests my wife and myself, but we have not read the book. And she was talking to me the other day. She goes, you know, I just don't have time to read the book, but I want to read the book before I go see the movie. And I said, why don't you download it? And you know what she did that afternoon?
I hope she used the audiblepodcast.com/TRN opportunity.
She didn't, because we're already members. So she ponied up the money and actually not only downloaded the first book, but the second book. So she's actually listened to both books already. And now she's ready to go see the movie. So go. The nice thing about Audible is they're supporting our podcast. They help us produce more content. And they're also giving away a free download to Trail Runner Nation members if you go to audiblepodcast.com/TRN. You can get one for free.
Are we recording?
Faith, give me a little 1-2.
1-2.
1, 3, 4, 5, 6.
Check.
Ashley, were you expecting a professional podcast?
No, I wasn't. Apparently not. Sorry, guys.
Yeah.
And it was a miserable, miserable day. Thanks for joining another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name is Scott Warr.
And I'm Don Freeman. And today we're with John Vonhoff. And John Vonhoff has probably helped more runners than he actually knows. Well, I'm sure of that. John von Hoff is a number one. He's a runner. He's done well over 20 ultras, 50 Ks, 50 milers, 100 milers, 24-hour runs, and a 72-hour run, which I've had a 72-hour run on a 24-hour run once. it felt like it. John's completed Western States. He's volunteered many times at Western States and other runs. You may have seen him there and benefited from his knowledge. He's the foot expert. You know, that's Scott. When I think of John, I think of a problem with a foot. I think about his book, Fixing Your Feet: Injury Prevention and Treatments for Athletes.
You know, Don, when we first started bouncing this idea of a podcast around in our heads, we started thinking, well, who could we talk to? And John was on the short list.
Well, one of the things we wanted to do is try to help bring some knowledge into some people's heads. And we knew we didn't have knowledge, so we had to reach out to people. So John was on that list. John, welcome to the podcast.
I appreciate you having me. Thanks.
You know, ultra runners come in all kinds of sizes and shapes, you know, and we all have different hurdles and struggles out there on the trail, some with stomach, some with feet, Scott, some with, for me, the will to live out there, you know, halfway through a long race. And so for those of us that have problems with the feet, this is a good podcast. For those of us that don't want to begin having problems with our feet, this is important too, because just because you haven't had problems with your feet doesn't mean you're immune to it. It can always come up and visit you.
Most certainly.
You know, John, I'm going to throw this out there. The thing that is frustrating for those of us, including myself, that have feet problems and blister problems, is not everybody does. I mean, my running buddy over here, Don, on the other side of the table, I don't know if you've ever had a blister on your feet, have you?
No, but I own the book.
Oh, that's the reason. Okay, we just solved it. End of podcast. Read the book.
I just knew that was a hurdle, so I bought the book. I've carried it for years on the trail, waiting for it to happen.
Do you put those in your shoes as insoles?
Yeah.
So John, what is the, why is that? Why are some people more susceptible to blisters and feet problems than others?
Oh, there's honestly more than one answer there. There's any combination of factors. Some people just have skin that's more susceptible to getting them.
Mm-hmm.
On that same token, though, a lot of people will not get them because they put all the miles on their feet that they need to condition them.
Mm.
So, for example, you go to Western States, the first 20, 30 people didn't have a whole lot, but it just seemed like everybody around me and people in general were having issues. And so how could I maybe come up with something that might help them?
So let's get down to basics here. What causes blisters?
Well, you know, in fixing your feet, there's a triangle in there that talks about friction and moisture and heat being the components. And so take away one of those and you lower the possibility of getting a blister on your feet. But what has been surfacing more in the last year or so is the whole, it's called shear. If you look at friction, if you put a finger on the back of your hand on the skin and you rub it back and forth, what you'll notice is your finger stays in one place. That's the friction holding it there. But the skin underneath there moves, and that's the shear.
Hmm.
So if you think of the heel in your shoe and it's moving, say, up and down in your shoe, what's actually moving more is the bone in your foot. Your skin is adhered to the sock, which is adhering to the inside of the shoe. So what's moving is the inner surfaces in your foot. And so that produces shear. Now, certainly there may be moisture in there, as there typically is on feet. And there's probably heat, too, just because it's that kind of environment in a tied shoe. So all those factors combine. But it's ultimately, it's this back and forth shearing that causes the inner layer of skin to separate from the outer. And a pocket forms, it fills with fluid, and boom, you got it.
So we I listened to what you told, what you just shared with us about this year. And so that I hope this question doesn't all of a sudden look like I wasn't listening. So what about like creek crossings and things like that? Does that make us more susceptible as we soak and drench our feet and move through that? Does that, for those of us that are susceptible, should we be concerned about that and tiptoe around it or just embrace the water?
Well, the first time I did States, I think I took my shoes and socks, my shoes off crossing Bucky Chucky. But I found the rocks hurt my feet, so it was better to keep my shoes on. I honestly would not take my shoes off anymore. I just go in, go out to the other side, but hopefully have shoes that allow some of the water to drain out, either because the upper is a mesh or because I purposely made little holes in the bottom parts of the shoe where the upper hits the lower, so the water will actually go out.
So, I could easily talk to you for, maybe 72 hours worth of running at Gibson Ranch. There's some advantages I can see to the shoe that drains quickly and something that we should look for. But some shoe companies, and they know what they're doing. They're not this first-time trail shoe company. Some shoes, they don't drain as well. And is that a trade-off for dust and debris? Can you maybe expand on that a little bit if there's anything there? Some shoes drain well. Some shoes don't as well. Is that to try to keep some of the dust out and things that create friction as well?
Actually, this past fall, I went to the Amazon to help at a 7-day stage race there. And in that event, their feet were wet virtually 100% of the time. In the mornings, they started with a river crossing of 200 yards. So constantly wet feet are going to stay wet and become much more waterlogged if the water doesn't have any way to get out of your shoes. So a lot of those folks had shoes that were mesh uppers, and so water pretty much got out okay. But the trade-off is that then you become more susceptible to dust and sand and just trail dirt getting in your shoes in the mesh. And then that gets inside your socks, causes rubbing in there and accumulation that can do further damage. So it's a trade-off. I would prefer shoes that if I encounter a crossing with water, that I know that the water will get out of the shoe. And there's ways of actually doing that, even if your shoes aren't made for that. That may not be clear, but I can explain that if you want me to.
Go ahead.
If you take your shoes, and if whether they're mesh or not, sometimes the mesh is on just the top of the toes, but take a nail and make little holes on either side of the arch of your foot and at the very back of the heel into the shoe. So when you've got your foot in there and step in water, the water now has three holes to come out of the shoe in the back and on either side.
That's a really good tip. I don't know if I've ever done that. That's great.
You would know if you had.
Well, Scott. I know. I'm taking that nail.
You're really unsure whether you've done that?
No. As you're talking about this trade-off of wet and getting dirt in there, one of the things that is popular in trail running are the gaiters, and I've worn them a total of one time in all of my running because I just don't seem to get rocks and stuff in there. Are you a proponent of gaiters?
I've over the years come up with several absolutes, and unfortunately, one of the trail running absolutes I have is gaiters. I swear by them, because if you're going to kick up dust and grit, it's going to somehow, at some point, it'll find its way in the top of your shoe. So the gaiter just covers that. I originally made gaiters out of a pair of old white crew athletic socks. I just cut the foot off and then folded it down. over the top of the shoe. But 2 days are made of nylon. They attach on the shoe. And they simply keep stuff out. And that's the value of a gaiter. Some people, though, if it's a really hot day, can find it can irritate their skin, but those cases aren't that common.
Mm-hmm. So let's get back to the shear part of it. That makes complete sense to me. So if there is less friction between the layers of your skin than the skin against your sock or the shoe, it seems like to prevent a blister, you need to reduce the friction between your foot and the outside, either the sock or the shoe. What is the best way to do that?
You know, I think we've come through a number of things over, say, the last, 10 years or so. I mean, there's lubricants out there. Everyone at one point used Vaseline because that's the only thing out there. But Vaseline, I don't care for because it attracts and catches dirt and sand and everything else. And over time, it tends to harden up on the sock. So with the newer lubricants now, whether it's Sports Slick or Body Glide, I mean, there's all kinds of them out there. They're applied, and if they have a little bit of silicone in them, even more the better. A lot of folks started to swear by Hydrapel, which is no longer made. So they're desperate for something similar, particularly if they're doing an event involving water, because it's the silicone that helps to protect the skin. So people are going to things like Desitin or any number of similar products out there that cover the feet, protect the skin, and so that's a lubricant. But if you use one for a long time, in some people, it will actually tend to soften the skin. An alternative is powder. But you put powder on, and there's talc powder, there's Z-Zorb, there's Two Toms, and so on. But over time, that powder it's absorbed in the sock. If your feet get wet, as they do because our feet sweat all the time anyway, the powder is no longer doing its job. So you have to reapply the powder.
Mm-hmm.
Not too many things can be applied on your feet and stay on and do their purpose for a long period of time. And then there's a lot of folk now that have gone to products like, double layer socks, to different types of socks, to experimenting with different insoles, to a product called Engo patches that are applied to the actual shoe or insole. And so there's a number of things out there, and unfortunately I can't say here's the one thing you have to do, because what works for me may not work for you. And so each of us has to find the best components for our feet and for our combination of the socks and the shoes and our feet.
Now, let's talk a little bit about some prevention. So you taped it at hour 12 of a 72-hour race that allowed you to finish, in fact, come in second. Do you see that as a good strategy for a foot problem person to take tape and start the race with that?
If you're prone to blisters on a certain part of your foot, then I would encourage people to learn how to tape and tape that area. Don't just tape your whole foot, because you're putting more volume in your shoe, and that does take up space. And unfortunately, some people go, I have John's book, but I haven't read the chapter on taping, but now I'm going to tape. And they don't do a good job. They don't know that they can increase the odds of a successful tape job by using tinctured benzoin on their skin to help the tape hold more. They don't know to round the edges of the tape or the differences in types of tape, too. So taping's good, but you have to know how to tape, preferably before you find yourself in a situation and you need to do it.
Well, your fifth edition of your book on page 129, the chapter 10, Taping for Blisters. So you've covered this subject, but as a preview, we're looking at it here. What type of tape, John? I mean, is it duct tape, athletic tape, some Elasticon? What is it that you recommend or have found that works best?
I think most of us, if we've been running for a long time, I started in the mid-'80s, duct tape was pretty much it, or mm-hmm. the white athletic tape, which unfortunately just plain doesn't stick. So duct tape was our main tape for a long time. Then along came other tapes. People began to experiment. I used Elasticon for a long time. I don't anymore because, in my view, it's too thick and it's too coarse. And so I tended to switch to Leuco tape.
Mm-hmm.
Leucopor, and I like it, but it doesn't stretch. It's narrower, but it's very sticky, and in wet conditions, it can adhere extremely well. And then I've gone to kinesiology type tapes like Kinesiotex and Rock Tape and Strength Tape. And in the Amazon, I tried two different kinds of tape, and I came away with the feeling that strength tape was the best one made for a wet type of environment. So that's currently my tape of choice, but the Leuco tape is really good too, and I like it, and I carry it. So those two are the main ones. I don't use duct tape anymore. It doesn't breathe. It doesn't shape to the curves, the surface of your skin. And if you apply a layer or even two layers, it can become very hard and almost cut into the skin.
Yeah, that is definitely something you want to experiment with on training runs to find out where the bend points are and where you should or shouldn't put it, because experimenting on, never do something new on race day. That would absolutely apply to your tape.
Sure.
My goodness.
Sure.
John, I want to just make sure I heard it right. Did you say your go-to tape is strength tape?
It's called strength tape.
Okay.
Now, that's what I'm going to use if I'm in a race where there are wet conditions, because it's, number one, it's stretchy, it adheres well, and it molds or it shapes around the curves of the toes, the heels, ball of the foot, and so forth. It's the same as many other of the kinesio-type tapes, but it's actually a tape that is made for wet conditions. If I'm working in the Sierras somewhere, like Western States, and there isn't any water, then I would possibly use the Leuco tape.
And John, you see a number of people out there that just pull up and take off their shoe to show you their feet. What do you think the biggest mistake or the leading cause, based on our own personal shoe selection, too big, too small, too tight up front, what are the things that you've, what pattern and trend have you found that put us in a bad spot?
I think over the years, I've become very, I'm happy that so many people are learning better foot care techniques. I think over the course of time, as I've helped at the same aid station at Western States, I don't see as many people with as bad of feet. And the people I typically see are people more toward the, you know, mid to the back of the pack. Mm-hmm. But for those people, they're often folks that don't have gaiters and their feet are just plain dirty, and the dirt has caused irritation in their socks and between their toes. It's surprising how many people will pay money to participate in an event and spend all of the money on gear and travel and crew and everything else, but come to the event with holes in their socks or shoes that should have been tossed out. I mean, that type of thing. I've actually seen those, and I just kind of shake my head. Something I'm very keen on, too, is the right and correct way of trimming toenails. Just good toenail care will help tremendously because a blister on a toe can really, really bother you.
Well, let's go there. Let's talk about proper toe trimming management or toenail trimming. Don't, Scott, we shouldn't advocate trimming toes. Toenail trimming.
I prefer, and I think most everybody out there will agree, that you cut the toenail pretty much straight across the toe. What I advocate is, after you've done that, to take a file and file down over the tip of the toe, okay, so from the top of the toe down over the tip, and just keep filing that until it's really thin and smooth. When I take my finger and run it over the front of the toe and then up over the edge of the toenail, I don't want to feel any edge, either in front of the toe or on either side. Anything that is felt, a burr on a toenail, a sharp point on a corner, is going to be something that socks can catch on. That sock will enforce the nail backward into the quick and cause trauma to the nail bed. So file them smooth so that you don't feel any edge. That's a key thing. And I see people all the time who have thick toenails because they maybe have been prone to losing their toenails after a long event. Their toenail comes in, and often over time, because they've lost their toenails so many times, the toenail comes in thicker. Well, as it comes in, file it down. Just because you have a thick toenail doesn't mean it has to stay thick. File it down. Any kind of an edge, an upward edge on the tip of that toenail, will catch either on your socks or it'll hit on the top of your toe box.
What about those people that have had them surgically removed? is that just nuts?
No,
or smart?
But that's not for everybody.
Okay.
I know individuals who have done that, and they're very happy to have had it done because they don't then have to deal with toenail issues anymore. But it's obviously not for everybody. Some people might have one or two nails taken out and not necessarily all of them. If you're into running extreme events, and by that I mean probably multi-day events, or are doing just a lot and a lot of ultra-type events, then maybe having your toenails out might be worth considering. But that's an extreme. Just good toenail care, filing them down, is often all that has to be done.
You know, you had alluded to those front runners that are coming through those aid stations that you've many, many times volunteered at, that they don't have as many issues with their feet because they have the miles on their feet. Is there a better way to toughen our feet up? I had heard, and you'd mentioned another little product that I use before I tape, and that's, and I can't, I'm not sure I pronounce it properly. You'll correct me. It's tincture of benzoin or something?
Benzoin.
I've heard that if you put that on your feet just on a regular basis, that will toughen up the skin. Is there truth to that? And what? How can we toughen up our feet?
Well, there's two ways to look at that. Number one, benzoin applied becomes very sticky. So you put this on your feet, and your feet turn kind of purplish, just the skin does, and is very sticky. So you're either going to walk around your house with sticky feet or put socks on, and they'll stick. It'll become, I mean, less tacky over time, but either benzoin, I know folks who have actually walked in place in a big basin of either sand or rice to toughen their skin up, who soak their feet in tea. What that does is it toughens just the outer layer of skin. And maybe I need to pull that out of the book, because I don't think anymore that that's a good option for people. Yes, you toughen your skin a tiny bit, but the blister doesn't form on top of your skin. It forms underneath your skin. And I know individuals who don't have any issues and have skin that's as soft as baby bottoms. So, I mean, those people don't have tough skin. And so you're, I think, better off to put the miles on your feet, do the training. Well, here's a thought too. Get rid of your calluses. Some people love calluses and they feel they protect their feet. And to a certain point, they do. But a callus is a sign of repetitive rubbing or motion at a, you know, at that point in your shoe. If you've got a callus on your heel is moving up and down for that callus to form. I've treated people where they have blisters underneath the callus.
Yep, I've done that.
You can't see, And have you been successful in getting the fluid out?
It's tough. You actually have to go in the side. You can't go through the callus.
Right. You have to hit it around the side, and you got to find that little pocket of fluid in there. And I know Ben Jones, who works Badwater, you know, he's a doctor. He will, he or he has at times injected a numbing medication into the skin before he goes digging to find that fluid in there. Because it isn't just as easy as a blister that seems to be more on the surface of your skin. It's down in there under 5-6 layers of skin, and you have to find that, that little pocket. And so I've seen too many instances where people are have problems with blisters underneath calluses. And I know the fluid's in there, and they certainly know it. But finding it is a whole different story. So I'm a proponent also of eliminating calluses as much as possible.
Which means if you're in the chair and they're working on your nails, Scott, as you may have, you would say if they offer to scrub those calluses off, you give the thumbs up, go after that, and smooth my feet out so you don't have to dig underneath that callus.
You mean at the nail salon?
Yeah, that's what I was talking about. I was talking about the nail salon.
At first, I thought you were at an aid station. No, an aid station worker isn't going to rub your calluses off. They don't have time for that.
You're down there getting your pedicure, your monthly.
Yeah.
Okay. Just make sure there's been a lot of people who have gone in for a pedicure before an event, and they get a person who gets carried away with a razor and they actually trim the skin off, and they're left with pretty much raw skin underneath there that does not have time to heal before their race. So make sure you know what you want if you're going in for a pedicure, and convey that accurately to the person doing the pedicure itself. Otherwise, just a good nail or a callus file will help, but a lot of people struggle to reduce their calluses. And it's not easy. It takes callus cream and rubbing every time you shower afterward to eliminate that callus skin off your feet.
So, John, if we see a callus, is that a sign that we have a biomechanical issue or a shoe fit issue or some kind of issue? Is that what it's telling us, or have we just
earned it? Generally speaking, yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
Okay, so we talked about the blister underneath the callus. Here is the question. I've heard many different people argue different sides. To pop or not to pop? Do you drain it or do you leave it?
The loaded question. Well, if you're walking around with a blister on your foot and it's 1/4 inch round, that little tiny thing can be very painful.
Yep.
And if you don't pop it, and if you continue your activity, it will probably expand into something larger and then may ultimately pop on its own. So when I work aid stations, I will virtually pop anything and everything just because it gets the fluid out, it makes it more comfortable for the runner, and it allows me to treat by putting tape or second skin or something over that spot to cover it up and protect it. What you don't want is for that the top of the blister to actually de-roof and peel off, because then you've got raw skin underneath that really can be painful.
Good point.
I pop almost everything.
What would you call an essential blister kit for a crew? If you were, you know, you're setting your crew up with everything you possibly think you might need, what would you say, don't leave home without this, crew?
An assortment of tapes. And by that, I mean you may have two different types of tape, like Buco tape and a strength tape or micropore paper tape for the toes. Either a pointed scalpel or pointed scissors, something to open up the blister so the fluid will come out. Some people will simply pack a needle. The problem in using a needle is it makes a puncture hole. And if you pull the needle out, it will typically seal up on itself. So if you use a needle, make sure you put it in and then kind of move it side to side to stretch that opening so it doesn't seal up on itself. And then obviously, if you use second skin or an antibiotic ointment, is good to have. A nail file. Because even though you're not doing a lot of nail care, if you've got a rough spot, you might as well take care of it when you find it. Some good absorbing, either 2x2s or 4x4s, it's just little chunks of gauze to absorb the fluid. Some type of a lubricant in there. Sports Slick is very good, but there's many others from foot goo and I have several others on my desk to try now. I have something called Trail Toes. Even something as simple as Desitin baby ointment can help too. I'd probably eliminate the powder. I don't think I'd stock that. I would not put any Band-Aids in there because Band-Aids simply peel off. And I'd have some antiseptic ointment. I'd have some gel so you could wash your hands off, you know, a towel or two, just some of the basic stuff that people, and here's the key, know how to use the stuff.
Yeah.
As runners, sometimes we get a little bit stubborn and we find a hot spot and we go, no, it'll be fine. Do you recommend taking the time out at an aid station early, or many of these things just go away and we shouldn't worry about them too soon? Or where's the time investment? What's your recommendation?
I'd like to ask a question, and that Good. May help answer it. And the question is, have you ever run on a trail and felt a little pebble, something in your shoe?
Absolutely.
And have you taken the time to stop and get it out, or do you kind of kick your foot on a rock or a stump or something to get the pedal to a different part of your shoe where it doesn't bother you?
Don actually names the pebble and plays with the pebble to keep him company.
Because I don't want to stop because I don't have any spot to sit down. Mm-hmm. Or I don't want to stop because I've got a rhythm going. So you don't stop. The pebble becomes a further irritant. It develops into a hot spot, which you now know because you can feel that little burning sensation. So better to stop and take your sock off, empty your shoe out, and that means pulling the insole out of your shoe to get rid of anything that might be underneath it. Peel your socks off, make sure that there isn't any junk in your sock, and then put everything back on. But obviously check that hot spot area, and if you've got a strip of tape or a dab of lubricant or something to put over it, then cover that.
Hmm. Yeah, I think that throwing a little bit of that Leuco tape or something that works for you inside your trail pouch, you know, those small things that we can wear around our waist, that would be a pretty good a lightweight insurance policy.
But keep in mind, if you put any kind of tape on your feet and then you pull your sock on, what I always tell people, ball up the sock and gently work it over the tape.
All right.
Because if you just pull your sock on, I've seen too many cases where folks have said, no, I'll put my own socks on. They gather their sock up, pull it on, and they destroy the tape job that I've just spent 20 minutes doing.
It's a pretty rare opportunity I get somebody to offer to put my socks on. I'll run 100 miles for that.
I also, in my foot care kit, I carry a shoehorn. It may sound nuts, but the little 50-cent shoehorn will help you ease that heel into your shoe. And if you've got a blister or hot spot on the back of your heel, having that shoehorn will help you ease that the heel of your foot into your shoe.
You have found yourself in the most extreme of conditions. Have you ever looked at a person's foot, saw the determination on their feet, and just say, oh my goodness, how is this athlete going to travel the rest of this distance?
Yeah, and that's the tough one.
Yeah.
I had an event several years ago that was actually an adventure race where they were doing a mix of trekking and mountain biking and paddling, and a guy came in and his feet were so badly damaged that I told him I did not think he should continue on. Hmm. Because they were coming off of a long bike segment, but his feet had been wet so long he had not changed his shoes or socks or aired his feet out that they were just so macerated. And the skin had started to separate at the toes of his feet. And his team was starting on a 40-mile trek. Mm. And I said, your feet aren't going to do it. And I urged him to stop, and he actually did. But then I've seen people this past October in the Amazon where their feet were wet, and they air them out overnight and continue on the next day. Kind of depends on timing. If you've got the time to allow your skin to heal some, and that means even in a 100-mile run, if you come into an aid station and you're going to eat something, change your shirt, etc., take your shoes and socks off, air your feet, you know, look at your feet, take care of them. before you can continue on. Don't just sit there with your wet shoes and socks on.
A proponent of a shoe change? Are you a big shoe changer?
I am, but just be aware that sometimes the shoes you change into don't feel the same. Hmm. If it's the same kind of shoe, same model, same everything, it's one thing. But if you're changing from one shoe into a totally different shoe, it's going to feel different, and that may or may not be good. So make sure you've trained in all the shoes that you've got in the bag, because there's nothing worse than changing into a different shoe, going a quarter mile down the road and going, I shouldn't have done that.
Yeah, you don't want to run back a quarter mile. No chance. That's a half mile.
Yeah.
So let's talk about shoes. We've got great, cushion shoes out there that make you stand a foot and a half taller when you put them on, and you have minimalist shoes. Where's your position? Where's the Bonhoeff position on this?
Well, in the old days, I ran in whatever I could find. I mean, I used the New Balance shoes for a long time. I landed on my heel like everybody did. And now times have changed, and there's minimalist shoes, and there's toe shoes, and there's just all these Vibrams and other shoes out there that there's options. And then, after we get into the minimalist, here comes Hokas and several other kinds. And so I can pick anything. I can have any kind of shoe I want. What's the right shoe? Well, I'm trying an ultra shoe. It's not quite as elevated as the Hokas are, but it's made with a zero drop between the heel and the forefoot. I'm trying that because I don't want to run anymore and come down on my heel and jar my knees and my hips. I'm getting older. So I'm starting there, but I've seen people do 7-day events in Vibrams, and they've done well with them. But I've seen other folks who wear Hokas in the Amazon, and after 3 or 4 days, they're so waterlogged that they're carrying 2.5 pounds of shoe on each foot. And so you've got to pick your footwear based upon the event that you're doing. Obviously a trail race, something with good tread on the bottom, something that will keep some of the dust and the trail junk out, something that will help because often it's hot. So I don't think there's one particular shoe made for every person out there. It's a matter of finding what is the best shoe for your feet.
I'm thinking in my mind, my shoes, and as I put them on, and we're talking about the sheer force, and I'm thinking, would there be a benefit if a person has blisters on the bottom of their foot to take the insole that comes with the shoe, throw it away, and put something with less friction, like a smooth piece of plastic that you've cut out and put that in there, so the foot is moving rather than the sheer force of the skin?
Many of the shoes nowadays come with the stock insole, or insert as it's sometimes called. That is essentially, it's a thin hunk of cardboard. If you take it out of the shoe, it'll fold over on itself. It has no support to it, and it isn't going to last you a long time. But a lot of folks will buy their shoes, and they'll keep those same insoles, and they'll run with them forever. And then they wonder why things are going bad. There's some great insoles out there. There's Superfeet, and there's insoles that you put in your oven to heat them up, stand on them, and they form a mold to the bottom of the shape of your feet. And there's different fabrics covering insoles. And if you look at some of those, they're very coarse. And for instance, at Badwater, what caught my attention was a runner that came in that had some Elasticon tape on the ball of their foot. and just a lot of pain, and they wanted to quit. I pulled that tape off. What had happened is the Elasticon obviously is stuck to the skin. The sock then sticks to the Elasticon because it's a coarse tape. So the foot goes in the shoe, and the sock then has to rub back and forth on whatever insole's in the shoe. And if that insole has a rough surface on it, it's not going to move very much. So what moves ultimately is the inner surface of the foot. The mm-hmm. bones will move and the inner layers of skin move, while the sock and the tape on the skin holds everything in place. And that's what was happening here. So I like insoles that aren't real coarse, that allow some movement of the foot inside the shoe, because there has to be some movement there. And mm-hmm. so taking that stock insole out and investing in a $25 or $30 insole can be a good investment in your feet. It's just experiment and find out what the best surface is. And that's okay. where this product I mentioned earlier, Engo, E-N-G-O, it's an oval or a rectangular patch, and it can actually go on the insole, like right under the ball of your foot. And it's a very slick surface. And so that allows the foot to move over that surface area.
Okay, so I'm going to divert a little bit. You're out on a trail run, whether it's a training run or you're in a race, and you feel the hot spot coming, and you still have another 4 miles to the next aid station, and you can't treat it. But you get to the aid station, and there's a blister. Let's say it's a half-inch blister. When you sit down, you pull the sock off, and there is a blister. So you take your sharp razor blade or scalpel, and you pop it, you drain it. How do you tape it? I've seen people just put tape right over the top of it. I've seen people cut a piece of tissue paper or something and the same size as the blister, put mm-hmm. that on the blister and then tape it so that the tape is actually not adhering to that loose section of, right. of skin.
My preference that I've used now for a long time is I carry a tube of zinc oxide. And so after I drain the blister on a foot, I take a dab of zinc oxide and put it over the top. Just so enough. That, what?
I was going to say, so that makes it so that the tape doesn't adhere to the blister?
Correct. Right. Because I don't want to tape right over the top of it and take a chance on pulling that skin off.
Right.
So the zinc oxide helps to control moisture, so any fluid that's still oozing out of there is controlled, but it'll keep the tape from sticking on the very top.
Excellent. Hey, before we let you get away from us here, John, what about sock selection? Just the material. Should we look for the smart wool? Should we get something thin?
The merino wool.
What's the best way to go?
There are so many advances in socks and materials that it, you know, I guess if I'm excited over something, it's how we've seen some fantastic improvements in socks. I like Injinji socks, particularly for people who are prone to toe issues. They're a little bit maybe uncomfortable if you first put them on, but I mean, it's something that takes getting used to, but if you blister on the bottoms or insides of your toes, I mean, they can certainly help. Never, ever would I recommend cotton socks or even cotton in your mix of whatever fabric makes up your sock. I would mm-hmm. avoid cotton every chance I would get. So the synthetics or the wools are the other option. If you use a merino wool, that's fine. It's an excellent wool, and they help with moisture control really well. There's the sock that I actually like over and above every sock out there is actually the Drymax socks, because they, that inner fabric of that particular sock is a water-hating fabric. It will not even allow water or any kind of moisture sweat to be caught in that fabric. It all gets moved to the outside of the sock.
Is that all Drymax socks, or is there a particular, you know, sports performance version that, that you're referring to?
That's actually all of them. Some of the ones that, some of them now have a bit of a Teflon material in them, but all of their socks have that component to them. And, but of course now, here's an important factor, too. If you have a moisture-controlling sock and you put it inside of a shoe that will not allow that evaporation of moisture away from the foot, all you're doing is trapping it in your shoe.
Mm.
But, I mean, most of our running shoes will allow that to happen. If somebody's doing, say, hiking or an adventure race and they're wearing more sturdy boots that are made of leather or some other fabric that doesn't allow moisture out, you're going to have issues. But socks are just excellent. But there comes a point when your socks become worn, you know, there's holes in the heels, toes, then toss them out and spend money on another pair of socks. The double layer socks can be very good, but try them ahead of time and take your time putting them on so you align the two layers of fabric in the sock. Whether it's a thick or a thin sock or whether it's two pairs of socks is totally up to you. Just remember that if you have your ordinary shoe and you now say, I'm going to try two pairs of socks, that may put more volume in the shoe, and all of a sudden your feet are scrunched inside of this tighter fitting sock and shoe combination.
John Vonhoff, the author of Fixing Your Feet: Injury Prevention and Treatment for Athletes. He defines athletes as people who push the limits of their feet. I like that. Here's what Runner's World says: from heels to toes, products to pathology, resources to rehabilitation, this book has it all, The Essential Guide. And there's 369 pages here. All of them apply to someone out there to help them travel those distances, hit those goals, because without feet, I mean, the feet will take you out. And so it's important we take care of them and learn about them. And if you think you're immune to blistering and foot issues, you know, you never want to take that for granted. Knock on wood, because your feet can take you down if you don't respect the job they're doing.
So, and you can also find more information at his website, which is fixingyourfeet.com, which has a lot of resources there, as well as his blog. There's a link to his blog there, which, you know, you keep that up to date pretty well, don't you, with new products that you're finding out about or new solutions. It's just a great resource, John.
Yeah, there's times when, like now, I haven't posted in 2 weeks because I've just had a lot of other things happening, but it's great because I get sent all these things to try, and some of them are really fantastic. And how else can you get the word out to folks?
Agreed. And if you're lucky enough and you pull into an aid station and you see John Vonhoff sitting there, you know that you're at the hands of a master of feet.
Well, and I have to say, John, thank you. I have not met you at an aid station, but I have met other people that are students of yours. When I ran Western States, I came into Forest Hill, and one of your students, George Miller, was there, and
yeah,
he worked on my feet.
Yep.
And so I thank you. I thank all of those people that, frankly, feet are pretty gross to me. And I think of those people that are putting their feet on their laps that have been running, you know, these feet that have been running for 60 miles or longer, and I'm sure they're just completely gross.
There's more pleasant
Thank
areas.
You.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you for doing that, because you made the journey not only more bearable, but sometimes you made it even possible. So thank you, John, for all that you do. You are a great resource for our community, and we appreciate that.
Oh, I appreciate you saying it. Strangely, I find feet fascinating.
you must if you've written 5 editions and a Chinese translation of Fixing Your Feet.
Yeah.
So make sure you go check out his website. His book is available in many different formats. I looked on Amazon. The Kindle edition is there if you like the digital format. This is one that you probably don't want just the digital. Go out and get both of them. Get the digital one so you can have that available. But you probably want the hardback so that your crew out on that race course, maybe even put little tabs on there and say, you know, these are the things that I'm susceptible of. You may want to read these few tabs to be my crew. Put together a foot care kit, not only one that you carry, put one together for your crew. And take care of your feet. They're things that are getting you from point A to point B.
Now go out and run.
Moss.
If I can add one final thought, and that is last year at Western States, I had a guy come up and ask me to autograph his copy of the book, and it was a second edition. And I asked him, I said, is this the most current one that you've gotten? He said, yeah. Well, each edition has gotten better, and if you don't have at least the fourth and preferably the fifth, because every time we update all contact information and all product information in there.
So, John, was that guy a runner? Was he a runner? Did he carry his copy, his second edition copy from Squaw Valley?
He actually was a crew member.
Oh, okay.
That's comical. Yeah.
Yeah. So get that fifth edition and check out for, further editions, newer editions. I'm sure that this is not in its final edition.
I think there's going to be stuff down the road where we will see a sixth. I don't know when, but, I can foresee that day, though.
So we'll say, John Bonhoeff, go out and write
Moss.